More names are made public in the Ashley Madison hack. Just ahead, we'll take your calls about the technological aspects and the legal ones. It's just ahead. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show's always live at 9, and now subscribe to that daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, we'll take your calls and thoughts and questions on the Ashley Madison hack. As new revelations keep coming forth, get on the line now with your questions at 549-2937. Then later, how the Duval County Public Schools are going green. Plus, local women of vision are honored and strut their stuff on the runway. We'll tell you about it. All of that ahead. But first this morning, everything that you need to know about that Ashley Madison hack. Avid Life Media, the parent company of the hacked extramarital affairs website, has actually placed a bounty on its attackers' heads after the hackers leaked troves of data about Ashley Madison users. More headlines are coming out, it seems, almost every hour as to who was allegedly on the site. There's a lot to discuss here, from the technology, whether people's online data is actually secure, and what Florida law says about divorce and infidelity. With more right now, we welcome our own digital editor and deemable tech host, Ray Hollister. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Also in studio, Jacksonville family law attorney Lawrence Datz. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts and questions about the Ashley Madison hack? Get on the line now. We'll go to your calls in a few minutes at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet us. So, Ray, let's begin with you.
Sure.
We are hearing this morning that the parent company of Ashley Madison has placed a bounty on the heads of the hackers.
Yeah, $500,000 Canadian. So it's around $379,000 US. That's interesting. I mean, this information is available to a lot of people who would be able to figure out how this information got out there. I don't know if it's going to be compelling enough for them, though.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are looking at the hacking team that did this as the good guys, because they exposed how bad the security was at Avid Life. And, you know, a lot of people feel that Avid Life was doing something they shouldn't have been doing anyway.
It has exposed not only the shoddy online security, but the names of many celebrities and public officials, including people who worked in Washington at the White House and the federal government. We're talking reality stars, people at ESPN. We can go on and on. State lawmakers.
Yep.
There's a state attorney down in Orlando who's been fingered, allegedly.
Yep.
It's just an astonishing cross-section of users.
Yeah, and the thing that in the media we've had to be very careful about is just because somebody had an account, or I should specifically say just because their email address was in the data dump, doesn't necessarily mean they had an account. One of the really bad things about the sites was that you could enter any email address. You could enter BarackObama@WhiteHouse.gov, create an account, and go right in because it didn't verify your email address. Which, I mean, if I signed up for AshleyMadison.com, maybe I didn't want an email back from them. But it still would have been good for them to verify.
And the state that's recording the most users is Alabama. But that's only because that's the first state in a drop-down menu, right? People might have said, oh, I live in Alabama, just because they weren't creating a fake profile.
Yeah. I did see an article yesterday that there are only 3 zip codes in the United States that do not have somebody who's registered in that area.
Wow, that's extraordinary. And if you're just tuning in, we'll go to your calls in just a moment on the hack of the Ashley Madison Affairs website, 549-2937. Let's talk now with family law attorney Lawrence Datz. Florida is a no-fault state. Adultery is not grounds for divorce. There are quite a few Florida names on this website, and the tragedy of this, Lawrence, is it's leading to divorces and a lot of heartbreak. What does the law say about all this?
Well, Florida is like you said, is a no-fault state. So what that means is it had to have if there's an extramarital affair, it had to have a financial impact on the marriage. And in the situation with Ashley Madison, there's a real question whether online contact amounts to an extramarital affair.
I guess there's really not a clear demarcation in the law when it comes to that.
over time, we became a no-fault state in 1971. So over time, it's really a broad definition. Technically, whether someone is using marital funds for a so-called extramarital purpose while the marriage is undergoing an irreconcilable breakdown.
Well, since Florida is a no-fault state, use of this site then, I guess, doesn't prove adultery. Could a scorned spouse bring this forward in a divorce proceedings?
I'm sure many will try. You know, there's an old expression in divorce law, if one spouse will admit they had an affair, the other spouse wants to prove it anyway.
Yeah, right, right. But as you said, just because someone's name, Ray, let me ask you this as well.
Sure.
Just because someone's name and email address is involved with this site doesn't mean that they committed adultery.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, let me actually say this. I've said it on my show. I actually had an account.
Really?
I love the shock in your face. We did a
this
show.
This is brand new news. No
well,
idea.
To your audience. Our
yes,
audience
yes,
knows.
Yes, yes, yes.
But yeah, we actually did a radio special last year, and we talked about dating websites. Well, to do the research, I signed up for a whole bunch of different dating websites, even though I am a married man. And just to find out how they worked. And what I found with Ashley Madison was that it was full of fake profiles. It was full of bots. I mean, I signed up as a guy, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the women weren't even on the site. They were just bots and fake profiles to get people to sign up for it.
Huh.
But yeah, you could create an account and have your name and address in there and not do anything, which obviously is what I did.
Right, right.
But I did try to reach out to people, and I never got a response. I never got any real reaction from anybody. It was always bots or, you know, automation. So,
Interesting. We'll go to your calls in just a moment. Emails and tweets as we discuss more revelations coming up day by day in the hack of the Ashley Madison website, 549-2937. Let's talk for a minute, Lawrence, too, getting back to Florida statutes. You say use of the Ashley Madison site could be relevant to parenting plan issues when a couple splits up. How does that play in?
Well, in terms of parenting, something has to either have an impact on the child or a likely impact on the child. It's a stretch. I could see somebody saying, you know, well, you spend all your time on Ashley Madison while your child was in another room. You
know. Here's a tweet from a listener. Infidelity is a crime in some places. Why isn't Ashley Madison complicit in illegal activity?
You've first got the real question, which was just mentioned, about whether if somebody actually did go to the site, what they're doing. In other words, to commit adultery is going to require physical contact, not just an online connection.
Here's another tweet. In the military, adultery is forbidden. A lot of military members are caught up in this.
Yeah, there are thousands of military members involved in this. And that was, honestly, as someone who hosts a tech help show, this makes me sad. So many people use their business accounts, their government email address, their military email address. And yeah, it is. I don't know how things work in JAG Corp, but it is illegal to have an affair, so that could really have some fallout for them.
With the advent of no-fault divorce, Lawrence, in the 70s, the law as relates to adultery changed radically. Let's talk about that for people that aren't familiar with the particulars.
Well, it used to be that someone would have to actually prove, in other words, to get a divorce, you'd have to prove abandonment, adultery, cruelty, intemperance, or incurable insanity.
And that's an interesting list.
And when you talk to the older lawyers, they'll tell you it would be, you know, in essence, horrible. If a woman was unhappy, she might provoke her husband to beat her up so she could get a divorce.
Because it was her only way out?
Right. And in essence, there was a shift that the government ought to get out of the business of telling people when they should be married, when they shouldn't be.
Sure. And that has brought with it pros and cons, I guess, depending on where you stand, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There are plenty of people who, and I get plenty of clients, frankly, who, if their spouse had an extramarital affair, just can't understand that, you know, if it's his fault, why doesn't he have to pay?
And have you had any clients come to you yet when it comes to Ashley Madison?
I have. Actually, it was before the story broke. And candidly, that's how I learned about it. And in the case I'm thinking of, a person just wanted somebody to talk to.
And people want to talk about this, but seemingly not live on the air, which I guess goes to the sensitive nature of this. We're getting tweets, but no calls. We do need your calls when it comes to your thoughts about the Ashley Madison hack at 549-2937. Ray Hollister, host of our Deemable Tech show and podcast. What are the most common questions people have when it comes to online security privacy?
Well, I think that a lot of people, especially in this, are a lot of people who had accounts are kind of sitting there going, well, maybe they won't find me. But this data is out there. And it wasn't published on the general internet. It was published on what's called the deep web. You have to have special software to get it and to download it. But what happened is people took that data and then put it on the internet. So now you can literally just look up someone's name or look up someone's email address. And that's part of the problem with this. This data was not encrypted. It wasn't hashed, as they call it, to make it where it's not just readable. It's just text. It's just a huge text file, basically. Mm-hmm. So anybody with the knowledge could get in there and get this information. And that was part of the hypocrisy that the hacker team was really trying to expose, because Ashley Madison claimed to be secure. They claimed to have that this was a private place and that you didn't have to worry about your information getting lost. And part of the data that was dumped in the hack was conversations with the people at Ashley Madison saying, ha, 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 there's no security. Maybe we should look into that. There's some amazing files of the conversations back and forth. Emails.
So how did the hackers break into this supposedly secure encrypted text file?
There's not a lot of consensus on how it happened yet. There's actually a rumor that it was an inside job, which that makes it easy. I mean, if someone's got the passwords, boom, that's really easy to get into. Other people are saying that they took advantage of a vulnerability in the server software. But the bottom line is, a big site, LastPass, which is a service that we on Deemable Tech, we tell people to use all the time, they got hacked. But nothing came of it because all of their data was encrypted. So the hackers got into the server and they got a useless file that they couldn't do anything with because it was encrypted so strongly to where it would take them years and years and years to get any of that data to be relevant.
So what advice do you have for people, and I know you've talked about this quite a bit, who are concerned about the security and sanctity of their data online?
Sure. Well, if you were involved in this, it's too late. There's nothing.
It's out.
It's out there. A lot of people have copies of the files. It's too late. I was talking to our music host, David Luckin, before the show, and he said something very poignant. Don't say anything on the web that you wouldn't want published in the New York Times.
Yeah.
I mean, that's as clear as it gets, because anything you put on the web can be seen and may be seen by anyone you know. And if you don't want it seen, you shouldn't be on there doing it.
It's 549-2937 if you're just tuning in as we discuss what to know about the Ashley Madison hack. Just scrolling through the headlines, everybody from Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's son, is denying a link to the Ashley Madison website. As I mentioned, a state attorney in Orlando his name has turned up. More than 100 ESPN employees allegedly signed up for Ashley Madison from work. From work, from Bristol, Connecticut, the workplace. Lauren Statz, I know you're a family law attorney, but let's talk about employment law for a minute. How will this affect people's jobs? You know, if an employer sees that someone's been engaging in this type of activity from their desk at work.
Well, put it this way, you're right. It's a little bit beyond my field of expertise, but in Florida, employers, it's what's called an at-will work state. An employer could dismiss somebody for it. And I would imagine some of this comes down to policy in the workplace. Some of it comes down to productivity or some combination of it.
Right. Different employers may react differently. But, Ray, there's been much hand-wringing about the ruined lives from this leak of data. Ruined marriages, ruined lives, suicides.
There's been a couple of them.
An incredible fallout.
Yeah. There is. And jokingly, I've heard some lawyers calling it Christmas in September because, people are going to they're going to confirm things that they already felt or they already thought, and they're going to take some action about it. I think one of the things that came out about this, on top of the military, where there could be some backlash there or some fallout there, you know, this website was a worldwide website, and CNN Money pointed this out, that there are 79 countries in the world where homosexuality is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And in several of those countries, the punishment is death.
Yeah.
And this wasn't just for, you know, philandering guys to find women and vice versa. It was also for them to find same-sex partners. And that, how those countries are going to handle that is entirely up to them.
Yeah. There has been some coverage of people fleeing their country.
Sure.
Because they're literally afraid for their lives. When it yeah. comes to same-sex relationships, Lauren Statz, the same rules apply in Florida when it comes to marriage, divorce, and all that. Even though same-sex marriage just became legal here in Florida.
That's true. In other words, adultery, I guess, in a same-sex marriage would be the same as in a heterosexual marriage.
Sure. And let's go to your calls on the Ashley Madison hack. What are your thoughts and questions? We have in studio our own tech expert, Ray Hollister, host of the very popular Deemable Tech, and family and marriage attorney, Lauren Statz, 549-2937. Rachel in Bay Meadows. Hey, Rachel, good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks so much for your show. So the question that I have is really more technical. I'm happy to hear that part of the failure of this website was that they didn't actually have good encryption. But for us who want to make sure that our data is protected on the web, is there anything else we should do when we interact with these websites that we might use on a regular basis to know for a fact that their encryption is really up to snuff?
That is a good question. First off, you want to make sure that it's going across to secure connection. So when you're on the website, you'll see at the top, it'll say HTTPS. That is a very important thing. That means that it's being encrypted as it's being transmitted. Unfortunately, you kind of have to go at the will of the company as far as whether they're actually encrypting the data on their end. Fortunately or unfortunately, hackers like this team are exposing when they are not doing it properly.
And it's 549-2937. Here are a few more tweets. They ruined their own lives by trying to cheat. The hack didn't ruin anyone's life. They did it to themselves. Here's another one. Is it true or false that some Ashley Madison accounts also have credit card info that traces it back to the owners?
Yes. And that's the thing that's especially exposing. For them to have a name and email address, I could go and create an account right now for you. I wouldn't do that, but I could. I know your email address. I know your name. I could create one right now.
Please don't do that.
I won't do that.
I know you won't.
but you can't just put someone's credit card number in and their address, all that information. So that was what the journalists who have access to this data, they're trying to be very careful of making sure there's multiple ways to verify that this person was on the account and was using it. And paying money is usually a good sign that it's being used.
Lots of calls coming in now. Let's go to David on the north side. Hi, David. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I just have a quick question regarding the, I guess, legal liability, because I heard one of the things about this website is that they would charge users to delete their data off the website. And then with the hack, it came to light that even though they would take money from users for that, they didn't actually delete that data. So would they be liable to any sort of lawsuits because of that? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
I think they definitely would. It's a form of extortion. And Florida, both Florida and I'm sure federally, there are laws for what are called civil wrongs for criminal practices.
Yeah, they made it sound like they would wipe all evidence of your existence on the site. Even though when you got into the tiny details, it was basically they would take all of your communications out of the profiles of other people. So that was the problem. You know, like when they pulled the data, all these credit card transactions of these delete accounts were in there. So obviously they had an account.
Oh, 549-2937. Autumn in Ortega. Autumn, hello.
Hi there. I just want to make a statement, I guess. I think it's pretty terrible how people are gleefully, you know, picking over these records to find celebrities or whomever, you know, personal acquaintances even. I know that you can go and check your own email type things and other people are checking others. I think it's terrible because if this was a shopping website or Target or, you know, any of the other things, would people be, I know that the nature of this website is a little bit more clandestine, but I think it's not something we should celebrate. It's still a hack, regardless of what kind of information the hack has overturned.
Hmm. Yeah. So, Autumn, thanks for your thoughts. Thank you. Ray.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's been weird because this hasn't happened before. Usually when a site gets hacked, they try to extort money from the company. They didn't do that. With this one, they just said, shut it down or we're publishing this information. And the ones that I have seen, it's been because of hypocrisy. It's been these people who are standing as moral preachers or moral speakers, and then turns out they're actually committing all kinds of...
Mm-hmm. What do you think about that, Lauren Statz? There's been a lot of discussion about that people known for promoting traditional marriage, traditional male-female roles, or some of the folks caught up in this.
Well, in the in the divorce world, it's nothing new to us, so to speak. They're human, is what it comes down to. And I think I would add that the people who use the site are human.
Sure.
To the caller's last comment. The difficulty I think for people in marriages is the deceit. That they didn't know, mm-hmm. That their spouse was unhappy or, mm-hmm.
Sure.
Doing something behind their back, in effect.
Yeah. The deception.
Yeah, absolutely.
And someone just sent the show a link to a new headline that America's fighting men and women might have been sweating bullets last week after Defense Secretary Ash Carter said the armed services are looking into military email addresses that showed up. But apparently servants officials say the mere presence of an email address on the site isn't enough to investigate someone for adultery, which the military considers a crime.
Yeah.
That just crossing this morning, another call from Ortega, Mitch. Hi, Mitch. Go ahead.
Good morning. I just wanted to make a comment, I guess a question. It seems to me that the focus is more on the infidelity that resulted from participation in this website, and that's where the media sensationalizing is. And less of a focus on the crimes that were really committed here. And certainly the hacking is a crime, but also the extortion on both levels, extortion by the company to its members, or alleged extortion, and also the extortion that the hackers used in blackmail in trying to get something to in exchange for not releasing this information. And I wonder why the primary focus on the media's attention isn't related to that, rather than the sensationalizing of what the members were receiving.
Yeah,
and I'll take your
answers off the air. Yes, thank you so much, Mitch.
That's a good point. I mean, honestly, in the tech news world, it was a big story before the data was released. I mean, the hack itself was. Mainstream media, I don't know if that was a story that people were interested in hearing. It's just another hack. I mean, there's so many hacks. There's, Target was hacked. Home mm-hmm. Depot was hacked.
Yeah.
We're getting so many. We're getting inundated with those.
Do you think the fallout from this will, and the potential legal costs, will shut down Ashley Madison?
I wouldn't be surprised. I imagine they're going to face a lot of lawsuits, probably a big class action lawsuit, too. It would not shock me.
One more call. It's Jenny on the South Side. Hi, Jenny. Go ahead.
How are you? Yeah, I was just calling. I'm certainly not a techie person. But years ago, when I worked for a major corporation and computers first came out, it was called the intranet. In other words, servers, everything were within the corporation. And you knew that you didn't do anything on that without permission of the company. Then we switched to internet, which meant international. Anybody had access to it. And I'm just shocked at so-called techies who think that what they do is private, because we see hacking in the government and corporations everywhere. So... that's just a thought process to everybody. Think about what you're doing before you do it, whether it's right or wrong.
That's good advice, Jenny. Too bad more people don't take it. Lawrence, good advice when it comes to your marriage and how you use the internet, right?
Absolutely. Look, the best thing is, and I think Ray said it earlier, yeah, you don't want to do anything that you wouldn't want the public to know.
Yeah, because no matter how secure a site is, no matter how secure a system is, whether it's an intranet or an internet, it can be hacked. It can be accessed. It's just a matter of time. If someone wants to gain access to it, you know, Ashley Madison and Avid Life, they fell down on the job, in my opinion, in securing their data. They should have done a better job. It was way too easy for them to get this information and put it out there. But even if they had, like LastPass, who is incredibly secure, they still got hacked. So it can happen. It can happen to any site. It's just a matter of time.
That is certainly the case. In the meantime, thank you both so much for sharing your really smart insights on this. We appreciate it. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
We were joined by WJCT's digital editor and Deemable Tech host Ray Hollister, and also Jacksonville family and marriage attorney Lawrence Datz. And much more still ahead. Later, we'll profile the woman leading the change in educating local kids with learning disabilities. But up next, Going Green looks at sustainability in our public schools. That's in a moment.
It's scary out there. We know that. The Dow going crazy, China doing who knows what. So here's what we're going to do. Next time on Marketplace, another way to think about all this volatility from the guy who invented the volatility index. What this is all going to mean for U.S. businesses, both big and small. And of course, the rest of the day's business news and, oh yeah, the numbers from Wall Street. It's all from APM. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Spend your life searching for exactly the right words, only to discover that sometimes the perfect words are no words at all. On the next Snap Judgment, Unspoken. Snap Judgment, storytelling with the beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Have changed.
Relax Radio is easy listening with an edge.
And I love the fact that I can hear 1 minute Ella Fitzgerald singing, you know, some torchy number, and then I will hear something Van Morrison.
Make a $120 gift to WJCT and you'll receive an HD radio so you can tune in to Relax. Call 904-353-9528 for more information.
Hey, where did we go?
Welcome back. Well, here's news taxpayers and parents will love. An inspiring sustainability effort is saving our local school district millions. It's today's Going Green on the show as we welcome Susan Carew. She's Director of Facility Engineering and Energy and the Green Champions team leader with the Duval County Public Schools. Susan, a pleasure. Good morning.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks for asking me and helping us get the word out about
Absolutely.
Our
program. Absolutely. Now, as the school year gets off, just last week in Duval County, or this week, I should say, parents are focused on back to school, getting their kids in the right classes. What they might not have realized is that this Green Champions effort is saving a lot of money. Let's begin with that. How does Green Champions work, and how is it saving the district money?
Well, we have facility improvements and then the occupant activities that help us save energy and water and promote recycling at the schools. And so we do projects like install occupancy sensors and high efficiency lighting and air conditioning and efficient irrigation controls and things like that that help us save energy and water.
And how much do you estimate you've saved over the last however many years?
I've been here 10 years, and our cost avoidance over the last 10 years is over $85 million.
$85 million. that, I think, when people can talk about the hard data of sustainability efforts, that's something people can really get their heads around, that these efforts save money. For people that really like the green aspect, that's great. But the business case for these types of changes is overwhelming, isn't it?
Yes, and I think our program is a little bit different than other people's programs in some ways because we work with the occupants in the facilities very closely to make sure we work with each other to accomplish all of our goals and objectives. The Green Champions goals are to save money by eliminating waste, conserve natural resources, and incorporate sustainability into the curriculum. And so mm-hmm. as I've talked with other school districts and other government entities, I found that most of them keep their programs separate. The occupants may have a green building program and the facilities has a program, but by us working together, we form a very powerful team to accomplish all of our goals and objectives.
What sparked your interest in sustainability?
Well, for me, it's primarily about saving money. Mm-hmm. The more money I can save in utility costs, the more funds they have, you know, the superintendent and the board has to implement programs to benefit the kids. So, mm-hmm. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm sort of a capitalist in that I like to save the money. That's where I get my enthusiasm. And obviously what goes with the saving money is the environmental impact and the influence on the kids.
And what, tell me about that too. How does it influence the students?
Well, these Green Champions are teachers out at the school. And they are looking for activities, green activities for the kids to do so they can change the culture at the schools to be more green. They do things like they do energy patrols and then they report back to me that, hey, these lights are staying on too long or these hallway lights are on all the time. Can you come put some occupancy sensors in? Or, hey, our irrigation system's running when it's raining outside. Can you come over and do something about that? So, you know, my department only has me and one other person in, so I can't be in all the schools. You know, we have like 18 million square feet. I can't be everywhere. So they help me. They're sort of my eyes and ears out at the school sites to help me come up with ways to save energy and and water.
And but there's a little friendly competition between all the green teams. You get people competing for the top honors. How does that work?
Right. Well, we have two different ways that we do that. One is just with the metrics. We compare like schools to each other, and for instance, we'll have a comparison of high schools, energy and water usage, and the left side of the graph is the most efficient, and the right side of the graph is the least efficient, where we can make the biggest impact. And once the principals see that, they'll you know come to me and say, I don't want to be on the right side of the graph. How can I get to the middle or to the left side? And then the other way is through the Green Champions piece is we have a competition every year for Green Champion of the Year. Mm-hmm. And they tell us about the activities that they've done throughout the school year. And we have a competition where they can earn money to fund their green programs for the following year. They have a coveted reserve parking sign for the Green Champion of the Year. Just some fun things for these people who are going above and beyond the call of duty. They're doing all these green things and green activities after school and forming green teams, just as a volunteer, just to help the kids out at their school.
People are really getting involved. They're buying into it.
Absolutely.
It sounds like. Yeah,
absolutely. When we first started in 2009, we thought we would get a little bit of interest, and what we found was that there are a lot more people out there that are passionate about being green in their own personal lives, and they said, hey, that's something I can bring to the school as an extra service, and we just had an overwhelming response of people that are passionate in their personal lives and bring that, makes them happier at work because they're doing something they love, and it makes a huge impact on the kids.
And when you talk about the data, $85 million saved within the Duval County Public Schools, any way to estimate the impact in terms of carbon footprint reduction?
Sure. There's a way to convert, you know, your kilowatt hours saved and things like that into your carbon footprint. I don't typically report that, But, because like I said, I'm more interested in how many dollars I can
dollars
save.
Dollars and cents.
So, right, yeah. Right.
And so you lead with that. And do you feel that leading with that is what is helping generate so much enthusiasm and friendly competition?
Yes, the schools definitely, the Green Champion becomes sort of our liaison for each school. And what the very experienced and successful ones do is they'll ask me each month for their metrics, for their energy metrics, their water metrics, and their recycling metrics. And what a good practice is for them to post those in common areas around the school and then also discuss them at staff meetings. So they can talk with the rest of the staff at the school about, here's where we are compared to other elementary schools, and here are some things we can do to move ourselves to the more efficient piece. So those are just some of the activities that the Green Champions do for us. They become our liaison to help us with the school's energy and water and recycling metrics.
Pretty exciting. Susan Carew, the Green Champions team leader at the Duval County Public Schools, she has saved the school district $85 million. She is a champion, and it's so exciting to meet you and hear about it. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And we're back in a moment.
This Going Green segment brought to you by Bug Out Service.
The Pentagon wants to close the prison at Guantanamo Bay. It's considering moving detainees deemed too dangerous to release to the maximum security prison at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas.
We have the security needed. I want Gitmo closed down.
I live here. I don't want them in my backyard.
A divided community, later today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Spend some time in the Square, an online venue for local artists. WJCT, the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville, and Grassroots Natural Market invite you to vote for your favorite submission. Vote now through the end of the month. To learn more about the Square and to place your vote, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
WJCT is proud to be your number one preset for your evening commute. But if you only turn on 89.9 when you're driving, here's what you're missing.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for
listening. This is The World.
Spend your afternoons with WJCT for unique conversations about the topics of the day. Join us weekdays from 2 to 6 for The Takeaway, The World, and All Things Considered. It's the smart way to spend your afternoon.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First is proud to present the 4th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire teachers. Saturday, September 12th at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Tickets are only $30. Spend the day sharing ideas with colleagues, learning new ways to engage students, and empowering yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
Welcome back. And finally, this hour, some of this area's most visionary women will soon be strutting the catwalk at a special event. It's the 2015 Women of Vision Awards, sponsored by Girls Inc. And one honoree at this luncheon and fashion show is really at the forefront of major leaps forward in education here in our area. Here to tell us more, Peg Ganger, Executive Director of Girls Inc. of Jacksonville. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
And also with us, Woman of Vision honoree Rachel Vitti, president of the GRASP Alliance, the driving force behind the city's new GRASP Academy. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa, and good morning, Jacksonville.
Thank you both so much for being with us. In a moment, so excited to hear more about GRASP Academy. There's so much interest in it. But first, Peg Ganger, you've got an all-star lineup of 2015 Women of Vision honorees. They're going to be modeling and strutting their stuff at the Alhambra Theater. This event is really something special.
Yes, it really is. It's our second year of doing it. And we have a great lineup of women again this year. We had a great lineup last year, yourself included.
It was a lot of fun. Yes. It was exciting. And here are just a few names. Mia Jones, Eden Kendall, Janet Owens, Kristen Keene, Donna Orender, Rachel, and more. You've picked a fantastic. What are the criteria for the women that you chose?
Well, we really try to honor women that are making a difference in the community and with focus on women and girls. So we will talk about how they are women of vision more than what their career is, what their, you know, education is. It'll be fun, quick. It's a great event.
You get lunch, a fashion show, and some of the girls in the Girls Inc. program, which is in the Duval County Public Schools, they will be modeling as well.
Yeah. And this year, one of our honorees is Barbara Trusolito, who is the executive director of Dignity You Wear. And they are actually providing the clothes for the girls this year. So it's going to be fun. And the girls will get to keep their outfits this year. So that'll be fun.
Very nice. And for people who aren't familiar with Girls Inc., it is a really special organization working with young girls elementary and tween and preteen age when it comes to literacy, pregnancy prevention, self-esteem, and more.
Right. Yes. We are in seven Duval County elementary schools every day after school with a literacy program for kindergarten through third. And then we're in seven different Duval County middle schools with health education every week. We're in there taking over the health classes. And then we have summer camp where we focus on preventing summer learning loss. So very focused on the education.
So, Rachel, when people come out to this event and see you model, which will be really chic ensemble, they'll be supporting Girls Inc. But you will be honored as a woman of vision, in particular because of your leadership in creating Duval County's only new school, Grasp Academy. More than 200 students starting out the school year this week with special programs. These are kids with severe reading, writing, and math challenges.
Yes, this is somewhat of a dream come true for the hundreds of families and parents that we represent. We know that dyslexia is the most common cause of reading, writing, and spelling issues in elementary school, and it affects as many as 1 in 5 students. So we are thrilled to have a superintendent and a school board that supports this initiative and supports students that have learning differences. Research is now showing us that people with dyslexia have alternative learning styles, which also means that they have increased strengths in other areas. So it's not only remediating their deficiencies, but empowering these kids to recognize that they can be successful. As soon as they learn how and what to read, they can shoot for hit the stars, really.
There's been so much demand for this program, not just in Jacksonville, but people actually are moving to Jacksonville from other cities so that their kids can go to this school. Isn't that right?
They sure are. And that's why it was important for us to do this, because I was one of many parents in Miami-Dade County that hit that wall for services for my child when I realized something wasn't clicking. And so there were no other services. I mean, yes, you can get an IEP for certain issues, but there's still not a consistent effort to make sure these students are getting the adequate education that they need. So yes, there is a need for this program to be available for students, and so we've communicated with legislature people and other parents, grassroots parents groups across the state and across the country to make sure this initiative is recognized and replicated.
And you see that happening. Other cities, other states will try to duplicate the success of
this. Yes, we've had people from across the country call us and say, hey, what's going on? Can we come visit? We've had parents groups visit as well. So this is getting national recognition.
What are the reactions you're getting this week? I know it's just been a few days, but from parents and students when they come into this brand new school?
I think one of the biggest surprises from the parents, and even last year, was the social emotional advantage that came along with coming to this school. We knew that the academic success would come. Our academic success was wonderful. We had students make 1.5 to 2 years worth of growth in 1 year academically in reading. But the social emotional development, where they felt like they were empowered and they could advocate for themselves. It was a benefit. And most parents are saying, my kid's coming home with more confidence. My kid's coming home with more energy about school. It has really transformed lives. One parent had even said, this is a medical equivalent to a life-saving procedure.
Wow. And that mission really jibes with Girls Inc. as well, Peg. The tagline is that Girls Inc. strives to make sure that girls are smart, strong, and bold.
Right. Yes. So, yes, actually, Rachel and I are talking about how we can work together since we work with kindergarten through third, and that would be a time to recognize issues with dyslexia. So we're talking about how our facilitators might be trained to be able to do that.
Yeah. Building kids' self-esteem in the early grades is a big part of the challenge educators face, whether they have a learning disability or not. Mm-hmm. It's become part of school.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I when Peg reached out, I didn't hesitate to say yes, because I feel like when girls are confident about their bodies, their intelligence and their worthiness and their sexuality, they have the opportunity to go into the world and fully express themselves as girls, as women, and as leaders in the community. And I was fortunate enough to feel that way when I was young. And so I continue to live by that today.
Sure. And as you said, the Duval delegation is taking note. State Representative Janet Adkins is the chairwoman of the House K-12 Subcommittee on Education. She's holding an education summit shortly after the Women of Vision event. This is coming up September 10th in Yulee. They're going to discuss GRASP Academy. Is that right?
They should. I do know Nikolai is on the panel, or he may be doing some opening remarks. So yes, this has gotten a lot of leverage in Florida and nationwide. I know that other states have recently passed legislation to put dyslexia on the books, because not all states have dyslexia within their bylaws. But just one thing I do want to reiterate is that dyslexia has nothing to do with intelligence levels, the most simple definition of this, and a lot of people get confused, is that it's simply not making adequate reading progress despite average to above average intelligence. And you also take into consideration adequate teaching and poverty levels. But it is simply where you can look at your child and say, you know what, they're just not mm-hmm. doing as well as I think they should be doing. Because even as a teacher myself and knowing what learning should look like, I was unaware that my child had dyslexia. So I just want parents mm-hmm. to know out there to be aware, to keep your eyes out, that it's just something where they're underachieving.
It's very common, and not only dyslexia, dyscalculia.
Yeah.
Which you actually told me about. That involves a learning difficulty with math.
Correct. And there's dysgraphia as well, which is involved with writing. So it's just, it boils down to how your brain processes information, and then the how it affects your reading is dyslexia, how it affects your math is dyscalculia, and how it affects writing is dysgraphia. And so all that's intertwined. And we've got the brain research now through functional MRIs to show us that it's just the neurons aren't necessarily firing in an efficient way. And it takes extra time and effort for a dyslexic person to process information.
And it's clear why Rachel was chosen as a woman of vision. Peg, as I mentioned, though, also State Representative Mia Jones, radio personality Eden Kendall, Janet Owens of the nonprofit LISC, Kristen Keene of the nonprofit ReThreaded, Donna Ornder of Generation W, and more. All women who have advocated in this area in one way or another, as you said, for women and girls. This is going to be a fashion show extraordinaire with fashion provided by Krista Eberle and Talbots. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So what else do people need to know about the event?
Well, the date is September 3rd, so it's a week from tomorrow. And you can make reservations online at girlsincjax.org. So just go to the website and you can easily make reservations. And we would love to see you there. The cost is $50 for the lunch. And you can buy tables for $200 or $300.
And the food is terrific at the Alhambra Theater. So
Yes, they did a marvelous job last year.
Come on out to the 2015 Women of Vision Awards next week. Rachel Vitti, Peg Ganger, a pleasure. And strut your stuff on that runway. I know it's going to be Very fierce. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Next on Diane Rehm, Islamic State militants have blown up an ancient temple in Palmyra and beheaded a renowned antiquities scholar. A look at recent atrocities by ISIS and the terror group's broader strategy for power. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.